everyone. Thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's October 2019, and you're listening to episode 143, which is a conversation about digital media and taking a digital Sabbath. On this episode, I'm joined by Rachel Olivant, who is a writer and graduate student at the University of Montana Billings, where she studies public relations with an emphasis in media and society. Rachel has written an article in our 42 number 2 print issue for our Postmodern Realities column. Postmodern Realities is written by younger authors, ages 40 or younger, for their generation, either millennials or Gen Z, and these authors address primarily, but not exclusively, members of their own generation regarding Christian apologetics and Christian living issues, both theological and cultural, as well as pop culture trends like film and television, literature, video gaming, music, and technology. Her article is called Seeking Spiritual Solace in a Days of Digital Distraction, and you can read Rachel's article by subscribing to the print edition of the Christian Research Journal at equip.org. Rachel, it's good to have you on.
Thank you. Good morning.
I think that most people probably have smartphones of all generations, but don't want to, you know, make that assumption about everyone because there are probably some Luddites out there. So can you explain what apps are and how they are defined in this context that we're going to be talking about, just like the overwhelming nature of digital interaction and what it means to consider what that does to us?
Well, I have to give a lot of the background of this article came from a book called The App Generation by Katie Davis and Howard Gardner. And they use apps as a general term. It's almost a metaphor to discuss the everyday way we're adopting all these new technologies. And obviously, one of the biggest ways technology is kind of entering our daily life is through our smartphones and our tablets. And when we get that phone, the first thing we do is go through and we put all our apps on it. So, and we can find, I mean, there's apps for everything. You can order from a restaurant. You can have your calendar on it. A lot of these listeners are probably using their phone or their tablet to listen to this podcast right now. So when I'm using the term app, it's referring to not only the icons on their phone, but kind of the way we compartmentalize the technology in our daily lives. Because that's really what the apps are doing, is they're putting everything into little compartments. And it's kind of how that works out.
That's so true. I mean, you can find an app to do basically anything. And I think a lot of times for myself, I might wonder, there's got to be an app that will help me do X, Y, or Z, or, you know, beyond like just a calendar or something. I'd be like, there's probably a good list app out there that can help me, you know, make a list electronically or whatever it is. So what are some patterns that you've noticed for yourself about your own app usage?
So I was actually a late adopter to having a smartphone. I put it off as long as I possibly could. But because I was just nervous that it was going to take over my whole life and I was never going to use a pen again or whatever. But once I finally got it, I realized there actually are ways it can make my life easier. There was one time I showed up for an appointment and I didn't have a document I needed. And that would have just, the whole thing wouldn't have gone forward at all. But once I remembered it was on my phone and my email and I fixed it, I just pulled out my email and showed it to him. So I do want to say that there's a lot of good stuff the phones can do. But on the other hand, though, everybody knows they're a time sucker. But the question is, like, are they helping you use your time well or actually wasting your time? And I've also noticed that when I'm bored or like feeling lonely or whatever, I'll spend actually more time on my phone. But if I'm doing stuff in the real world, I'm not on it. Like, I just realize, oh, I haven't been on Facebook in like 3 days because I've been busy. So I think there's some sort of psychological thing going on there.
I know that. Obviously, people can take a lot of time if they're using social media apps that you mentioned, like Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. But I also know that you can go down a rabbit hole, like say on YouTube. Like if you start watching one video, you go to the next video, or even something like, you know, most newspapers have migrated to have an app that's available. So for instance, like the New York Times has an app, and I read that for work-related purposes. And you can start reading one article that will lead you to another article that will lead you to another article, which you never would have done in the print edition. It's only that day's newspaper, whereas now they have the entire New York Times going back to like the 1800s or something, if you're a subscriber, that you can now. And so it's this overwhelming barrage that you can just start making you wonder about something else. And before you know it, you look up and you're like, I came to read one article, and here I am 30 minutes later, still reading something. So in your article, in our print edition, you refer to a couple of different terms. One of those is app-enabled, and another term that you mention is app-dependent. So can you define both of those terms? How are they different?
So this comes back, the credit to this goes to Davis and Gardner in the App Generation book, but it just really put things in perspective for me when I read it. App-enabled means the technology is allowing you to do what you do better. So, and these are kind of my paraphrases of their definitions. So like a Google Calendar is a great example. Like in our family, we have my husband and two teenage girls who all have phones. And so we can coordinate our family schedule because everyone just puts the stuff in, puts their appointments into the phone. And then we can all look at it and see where we all need to be or if someone needs to be picked up. Or if my husband, you know, shouldn't schedule something at work at a certain time because someone has a concert. So there's ways that these can be really helpful. But the counter to that is app dependent. When your the technology is actually hindering you or it's causing you to have a false sense of control. One example that comes up is ordering online at restaurants, because a lot of the times you can pull up an app for your favorite restaurant and just order your food online and then go grab a bag and you don't have to talk to a single person. So an app-enabled way of looking at something like that, let's say you have to drop off your kids at school and then you have to be at work at 9, and you realize that if you just type in your Panera order, you can just run, grab the bag and still make it to work on time. That's, you know, helpful. That's helping you make sure you get breakfast and your coffee. But app dependent would be thinking, oh, the restaurant has too many people and I don't really want to look at anybody or talk to anybody, or I don't want to get out of my sweatpants. So I'm going to order on the restaurant to avoid social interaction. That's more of an example of something that's app dependent. And then the extreme examples are when people get, you know, their entire life online, like through a video game or a social media app, and they've realized that they're curating everything instead of actually going out and building relationships.
I know, speaking of the New York Times, I was recently reading an article that they did where a reporter decided to be like a food delivery service person, and the algorithms in the app were just also, you know, very demanding for the workers. They were trying to make it in really heavy traffic all the way across town. And so sometimes we don't even realize, even for the convenience, like you were mentioning, of you picking up breakfast on your favorite mobile app could also cause someone to maybe get in an accident on their way to deliver it or something like that. So these are not things that we had really thought about before. And like you said, people just grabbed it. And he noticed people didn't talk to him. They just grabbed their food, you know, at their apartment and just closed the door on him. And it's like, it's created on both the user end and the person delivering the food some interesting new challenges that weren't there before. So in the book that you've mentioned, they also talk about something called app mentality. So what's app mentality?
Well, to quote straight from it, because their definition is really concise, the app mentality supports the belief that just as goods, information, and services are always immediately accessible, so too are people. So, and then it goes on to talk about how we neatly order our life through apps. And then that begs the question of how our expectations about how much control we have in our lives are changing. Because the technology lets us to feel like we have all this control. Like, you can have your food ready. You don't have to wait at a restaurant. You can even program your electric toothbrush and make sure you brush your teeth for a certain amount of time. So we have all this control over the minutiae of our lives. And then that starts to bleed over into our relationships, our career choices, probably even our churches, because some people, if they get too accustomed to having that sense of control, they have a harder time being in situations where they don't have that sense of control.
So what is your biggest concern about the way in which we're adapting to these technologies and, you know, basically the speed at which people are adapting to all these app technologies?
Well, what I've kind of seen is the control that we have is giving us an illusion of control that's going to be very disillusioning sooner or later, because we can micromanage and hypermanage so many areas of our lives, but then we start to get really thrown off when there's something we can't control. Because, I mean, we can't control our neighbors, our families, our weather, our job, our political climate. So I just think it's important that for Christians to step back and remind ourselves that one of the most dangerous mentalities we can get into is that we're in charge of our own destinies. And I'm not trying to blow this out into hyperbole or anything, but the fact is the technology is trying to sell us the fact that we can use or control everything in our lives. And that's not always the case in the real world. So we just have to remember that while we can micromanage our toothbrush, we might not be able to micromanage our job or stuff like that. So just remembering that we don't have as much control as we think we do.
So you just mentioned a few moments ago, social media. So how does social media fit into, you know, being app enabled and app dependent?
So that's a special breed of app, because it's not only allowing us to control things like our schedule or, you know, hamburger order, it's allowing us to curate a persona and image that we show the world. So that comes back to that sense of controlling who we are and what people see about us. And then when we look at other people's online presence, we often see that out of context from the real lives they're actually leading. Let's say an example of a friend of your parents who's posting political memes all day long. You might actually hang out with them in person and they never mention politics once. It just what happens to pop up on their Facebook feed when they sit there and do their 15 minutes over their coffee in the morning. So it can really lead us to unfairly judge and evaluate other people if we get the app dependent mode. So when we look at our use of social media, it's really important to constantly evaluate if they're enabling or enhancing our relationships or if they're distancing us from others.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Rachel Olivant, and she has written a Postmodern Realities column article that is in the current new print issue of the Christian Research Journal, which is volume 42, number 2. And you can read her article, which is called Seeking Spiritual Solace in a Days of Digital Distraction, if you subscribe to the journal. And you can do so at our website for $33.50 at equip.org. But it could be that a subscription for $33.50 is not in your budget this month, and that's totally okay. But we would like to ask you for a gift of your time to rate and review our podcast. So you can do that wherever you get your podcasts. For example, if you get your podcast on Apple Podcasts, you would go there, you would search for Postmodern Realities, and you could leave us a review, or you could rate the podcast. A written review would be even better, and we'd like to get more written reviews up there. And the reason why we would is when you rate and review our podcast, more people can find our content. And this is the content that equips people worldwide, especially this podcast. We try to do a lot of current things in terms of cultural apologetics. So we would appreciate that gift of your time. Now, if you could afford something small in your budget, like a tip, maybe $3 or $5, which would be the cost of maybe a coffee drink or lunch out. And if you could do that, you can provide us a tip and thank us for all of this free content that you can get on our website, because we're not under a paywall, by going to our website, equip.org. So you hit magazine, there's a drop down, and there you'll see PMR podcast. You click on that, you'll get to the landing page of all the episodes, and you can click on the one for this episode called Seeking Spiritual Solace in a Days of Digital Distraction. And then if you go to that landing page there, you will see a link where you can give us a tip. So we really appreciate every way in which you partner with us. If it's becoming a part of the team of print subscribers, or maybe it's providing that written review on different outlets wherever you get your podcast to let people know about this content, or giving us a rating, we would be so grateful. And we thank you for your partnership. We were just talking about social media and how that might be a little bit different from other apps because of this idea of the curated self. And I think that is really true, that people can show a certain side of their lives, like maybe their home life, if they don't, you know, make it appear to be one thing, and maybe they might be having struggles, but they can show artfully arranged photos or things like that. I mean, none of us are posting photos of ourselves when we roll out of bed and haven't brushed our teeth or something like that. We usually post photos that we like of our kids or of ourselves or of our homes and things like that. So it's kind of like this barrage of information, especially if you have a lot of friends. I mean, I notice some people, I'm not really sure how they manage it. A lot of people do manage social media, for example, for work reasons. So they might have like 5,000 friends for that, like pastors or different people like that. So I don't know if they're seeing all 5,000 people or they've curated it in such a way they only see a few people, but it is kind of overwhelming. So, you know, your article talks about what it means to cultivate a digital Sabbath. So what is a digital Sabbath and what should that look like?
Well, that's the kind of thing that will look different for everybody. Basically, you just step back from your tech or your apps. And in this day and age, it's almost impossible to take a full break from technology. There's a book called Slow Media by a woman named Jennifer Ronch, and she took a year off and went back to 1998 technology. And she wrote about her experience, and it's a really interesting book. But the fact is, we can't all do that. She was in a pretty unique situation. So while that is an extreme example, for most of us, taking a tech break, it can't interfere with things like our work, our responsibilities, or paying our bills online. But what we can do is take an honest look at the role technology is playing in your life and choose some areas to step back from. And it could be something like just not logging in for Facebook or Twitter for a week, or just choosing to leave your phone in your purse when you go on your lunch break. And, you know, or maybe you don't put your earbuds in when you work out and decide that you're just going to pay attention to what's going on instead of just shutting everything out. But the point is to look at the space your apps are taking up, and then you remove them and you either put something else in to fill that space or just seeing what happens when we free up the space that the app took up.
So why do you think, you know, some of our listeners should consider trying a digital Sabbath?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, there's the app-enabled use of technology and then the app-dependent. So if we put our phone away and take a break from certain apps, it can give us a picture of where they're helping us and where they're hindering us. So I just want to use an example. Let's say we have two people who decide to stay off their phones over their lunch break. One person might realize that he's like missing his chance to check his personal email on his phone. So because it allowed him to get that out of the way over his lunch break, and then he had time to spend with his family when he got home from work, so he didn't have to get on his computer. But another person might, you know, leave her phone in her purse and realize that she's actually making conversation with people and getting to know her coworkers better. So one person might realize, it's like, wow, that was an area where I was enabled and I miss it. And I think that's a healthy way for me to use my phone. Another person might remove an app and realize, oh, wow, you know, I'm way better off without it. And I wouldn't have noticed if I didn't step back and try to figure out what else was going on. So, so it just helps to realize where we're over controlling things and where we don't have as much control as we thought.
You know, it's really interesting that you can, I don't know if some people know about this, but you can on every device. I have an iPhone, but I'm assuming you can do this on Android. But you can look and see what your phone usage is for the week, and it'll tell you if you've increased or decreased, and then it breaks it down by app. Like most used apps, so you can see on social media, oh, you used it this percentage of the time, or you used it this percentage of the time. And that's really helpful to, you know, keep yourself honest, because you might think, well, I'm not using my phone that much. And you look at that report and you're like, well, I've been on it more than I thought I was. Or it seemed like I was using it a lot, but I'm actually not using it a lot. I remember checking it recently and it was like one of my favorite apps is, this is super random, but it's a digital clock. So I use it a lot because I don't have clock, you know, we don't have watches and clocks and you can make it really big. So it was like my number one usage was this digital clock. And I did look and my social media usage wasn't that much. It was like 5%. So I was glad for that because it seemed to me, oh, I'm on social media a lot, but actually like my biggest usage was this app that is a big clock that I can use. But what have you discovered if you've done a digital Sabbath? You mentioned in your article that you do go ahead and do a digital Sabbath. You tried it. So what did you discover when you did so?
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, the scrolling. And in my article, I mentioned that, you know how some people, when they smoke, they go out and they, you know, have their cigarette as a way to step back and get away from everything and recollect. And I think for me, like my phone is kind of the equivalent, the mental equivalent of smoking. You just go back, you step aside, you read a couple articles, and then you go back to the real world. So one thing I've noticed is that it can get compulsive. It's like, I'm just going to sit on my phone and I have no reason to be on it. There is nothing in the world that I need to go on there. And so if I step away, it can help me be more engaged. And it also helps me not to procrastinate because the phone is definitely something that can distract me from my task at hand. So also when it comes to stepping back from social media, I've noticed that it makes me, for starters, I don't miss it. Like that's the thing is I'm on there so much you think I'd miss it, but after a few days, I don't at all. And then I realize that I think of a friend and instead of just, you know, peeking at their Facebook feed or seeing their Facebook stuff all the time and thinking I know what's going on with them, I'm much more likely if I send them a text or call them and say, hey, how you doing? Or let's go to coffee. You get a completely different view of what's going on in their life. And so definitely stepping back from social media specifically helps me become more engaged in my relationships and remember the quality ones. And another strange thing that I noticed is that if I spend too much time, like you were saying earlier with the article rabbit holes, where you're just reading all these random articles, I've noticed that if I do that for a while, it's harder for me to focus on an actual book. And since I'm a graduate student, I have to do lots and lots of dry reading. And sometimes I've noticed if I just take a couple days and I don't read online, it's easier for me to track a book. And I don't have science for it, but I've definitely noticed it's something. So that's the second reason why I'll step back is I've noticed that my brain's all over the place and I need to learn to focus again.
I think another thing that people can do, which I did years ago, is I turned off all push notifications for my apps.
Absolutely.
So I don't have any push notifications for social media of any kind, or even, I think the only thing that I have allowed is texting in case there's like some emergency that I would get that. But I think you can even turn that off if you want. So I don't get any news or alerts or anything like that, because then if you haven't been on your phone and you turn it over, it's just this barrage of all these things that you've missed. And I'm like you as well. Like last week, I was out of town and in meetings basically all day and through the evenings for about a week. And so in those meetings, you can't check email. It would be extremely rude. And so I didn't check email. And, you know, I'm kind of a news junkie. So I feel like every day I'm like up on all the news. And I just didn't have news for like a week. And I don't know that I missed it. You know, I was easy to catch up when I got back home. It's like, oh, this is what happened this week, you know? And so I think now we just can be up to the minute on every single thing. And it's just overwhelms us. But specifically, I mean, not just for all people out there, is there something about a digital detox or digital Sabbath that relates to spiritual life, especially for the Christian?
Well, there's a few that I've thought of. First of all, and this one's probably one we hear a lot in these conversations, is how prayer and meditation on God's word are vital for a Christian walk. And if we get wrapped up in tech noise, it's really easy to lose that sense of communication because we're trying to fill the noise all day. And I think Madeline L'Engle in her book on walking on water had some really good views on how the spiritual disciplines happen in quiet. And how if we take the time just to step back and listen, even if, you know, it's just kind of routine, that's the space where we give kind of that communication to happen with God. And if we're filling it with New York Times articles or Instagram cat pictures or whatever we're filling it with, we aren't allowing that communication to happen. And another one that I've noticed is when we only see people on social media and we only see what they curate, it's kind of easy to forget that that person is an image bearer of God who needs to be loved and respected on those grounds alone. And also, if we curate our social media news feeds too carefully, we can end up shutting out people who God has called us into relationship with. Because we think like, well, I don't like what they post to Facebook, but you're not overlooking about who they are as a bigger picture. And then finally, if we're buying into the mentality of these apps are giving us the control over our lives, it's gonna let us down. And when we're faced with circumstances out of our control, we need to respond, you know, in that prayer and meditation that we might be missing out on already. So it kind of leads to a slippery slope of crisis if we don't have our perspective on God's in charge and I'm not, and I need to be in relationship with him, because we get into just this habit of micromanaging and hypermanaging our lives.
I think that's really true. I mean, one thing about the Christian life is that we are told that we need to listen to God. And I just don't think, I mean, everything's come down to these soundbite pieces, even for Christians, like, oh, you can do your devotion in less than a minute or all these different things. But I think to really develop spiritual disciplines, like you were saying, to be in prayer and in the Word, it requires you to really focus and consider who God is. And you just can't do that if you've got this barrage of information. Otherwise, we start maybe shaping who we think God is based on this barrage of information that we have, even if we're looking at, you know, Christian articles or whatever it is. And the other thing is, you mentioned earlier, like calling a friend. I think as far as Christians are concerned, to have community with one another, we just really need to do that face to face. Like you were saying earlier, it's like we can get a skewed portrait of somebody to think that they're like something because of, you know, what we see on their social media feed or their Instagram account or something like that. And that might not really be truly who they are. And you need to take the time to get to know that person in real life. And so it's very hard when we've got these distractions. And another thing too, I think, is that I've noticed, I don't know if this is, it's probably true for adults too, but for teens, for sure, you mentioned you have teenage kids, is that this whole idea of feeling validated by likes. Like I had a friend whose daughter was just really crushed because she posted a picture of an outfit she was wearing and they all went on to try like dresses for a dance with friends. And like she didn't get as many likes as the other girls that were on the same, you know, shopping trip. And so sometimes I think maybe subconsciously, even for adults, we might be looking for those likes. Oh, I should check social media. I wonder if anyone liked my Instagram picture. I wonder if anyone liked my Facebook page or replied to me on Twitter or my Facebook post or whatever. So what are some other things that you think Christians specifically need to consider when dealing with apps and not letting them overwhelm us? And not just apps too. I would say anything digital, like even binge watching your favorite, you know, Netflix show or whatever it is.
Well, I think you brought up a good point about, you know, wanting the likes and all that. I mean, just one thing that we can remember is our validation doesn't come from the little hearts on the bottom of a picture. Our validation comes from who we are in Christ. So that's one thing we can just kind of keep in mind. But there's obviously a lot of negative baggage that comes with any type of technology at all. So when we look at all these concerns we have and these illusions of control and the negative consequences is in our lives and society, we can remember as Christians, we're people of redemption. And we can look at how we redeem the time we use spending this technology. So I guess this is kind of the Christian way of saying app-enabling. How can we be app-redeeming? And we can be aware of the shortcomings in these technologies, but we should be focusing on how we can use it to improve the world around us and how we can use it to go, you know, make it a place where we can kind of be more fully us instead of being less us.
And I think, like I was saying earlier, we need to be honest about our app usage. And I think there actually are studies that when you were talking about science and reading online, actually when we read online, you don't really read every word like you would in a book. So you tend to scan things, so you might not get full information. So I think just to get ourselves out of that scanning habit, like you were saying, you were reading a lot of like textbooks for school. So some of us should step back and engage with some books. And so, you know, it's really refreshing when you do, you realize how much time you could possibly waste on any kind of technology, whether it's on your computer or on your phone or whatever it is. I recently have this assignment where I have to read 4 books in a short period of time. And so I don't have a lot of margin to be on my phone. And it's just interesting to like re-engage with a whole bunch of books, you know, and just to consider all the theses of the books as opposed to like reading, you know, different articles. And I've noticed even online, I don't know, there's some sites that people post their own, you know, articles on, it'll tell you 5-minute read, 2-minute read, you know? So we've gone to that. Like people won't even read anymore, even online, unless you tell them how many minutes it's going to take for them to read something. Well, we really appreciate this thought-provoking discussion about how apps can take over our lives if we're not careful, and how as Christians we should really think through about how we have to set those aside so that we can pursue knowing God and knowing other people, especially having community in the church. So finally, I want to end with some fun rapid fire questions for Rachel. So Rachel, it's fall. Pumpkin spice latte, yes or pass?
Pass, I don't do coffee.
Are you an introvert or extrovert?
Really extroverted.
If you're snowed in because you live in a cold area, what do you like to do?
We don't actually get snowed in. We're so snowy that we have to go do everything anyway. But I'd love to just drink tea and read books all day if I had the option.
And would you rather do your own taxes or serve on jury duty?
Oh, that's a tough one. Taxes.
And I'm going to have to ask that quintessential question. If you were to be seated next to anybody, I'm going to say living or dead, at a dinner party, what two people do you want to be seated next to? And you can't say Jesus.
Can't say Jesus? Okay. I just finished the Anne of Green Gables books again, so I'm going to say Ellen Montgomery, the author.
Okay.
Can I get two?
Who else?
Dorothy Sayers.
Well, thanks, Rachel, for being a guest on the Postmodern Reality Podcast.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been Rachel Olivant, and she has written a Postmodern Realities column article in the current issue of the Christian Research Journal, Volume 42, Number 2. And her article is called Seeking Spiritual Solace in a Daze of Digital Distraction. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media. Like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Anagraph, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. And please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Anagraph, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast.